You're listening to Booth Talk from the Aftermovie Diner. On this episode, we have a conversation with actress and Scream Queen legend Barbara Crampton. Welcome, Barbara, to the Aftermovie Diner. It's a real pleasure you could be here. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And let's start with your most recent work. You've got two films coming out this year, Your Next and Rob Zombie's Lord of Salem. Tell us a little bit about Your Next, what it's about, and how did you get involved in that show?
It's a home invasion movie. It's also, you know, it's definitely horror. It has some elements of comedy to it, though, as well. So it's actually a really, really fun movie. And I play the mom of four grown children. AJ Bowen is in it from A Horrible Way to Die. You may know him.
Yeah.
Simon. And she was also in A Horrible Way to Die. And so was Joe Swanberg. And they've worked together, you know, on that movie and for the director of Your Next. And so I sort of came into their family, and I played their mom. And also we have Nick Tucci. He's playing one of my sons, too. He was in Undocumented.
Okay.
And then it's a family reunion. It's a 35th anniversary, and we're all getting together for the first time in a while, and we all have issues with one another, and those come up. And then we become attacked by some unseen forces, and we're trying to figure out who they are and why they are and if any of us are going to make it to the end of the movie.
Excellent. Oh, it sounds sounds like a good plot.
Yeah, it was really, really fun and a great character. And I had been on vacation with my family last year and got the call from my agent that Simon Barrett, the writer, wanted me, and he's also one of the producers, wanted me for the mom. And I said, well, that's really funny. Nobody's seen me in a while, and I hadn't really been acting and hadn't been concentrating on it at all.
Right.
And yeah, and they said no, they really like you. And I said, well, they don't want me to read or come in and meet them or have a phone conversation. They said no, they're sure they really want you for the mom. So I really think they took it on blind faith that it was going to work out okay, and I think it did. We all had a great time together, and I just loved the character and loved the writing and collaborating with all these wonderful people. It was just fantastic. I had a great time on it.
Oh, excellent. And you said it had been picked up by Lionsgate at Toronto?
Yes. Yes, it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, and it became somewhat of a bidding war after the first evening. And it was really exciting, and Lionsgate has acquired it. But they also just bought Summit Entertainment recently.
Yeah.
So initially they told us that it was probably going to come out this Halloween 2012. But now because they have so many properties that they want to get on the screen, it's hard for them to put, you know, two movies up against one another
right
on the same weekend. So there's only so many weekends they have. So they haven't really given us a date yet. But they love the movie, and they keep saying, you know, as soon as we get a date, we're going to let you all know. So I'm sure they're working on it. We got great reviews, so we're all looking forward to seeing it again.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it myself. I was going to ask, actually, because you said that, you know, they took you on blind faith, and they just wanted you for the role. One of the questions I had was, do you find that younger directors who are, like, bringing horror back into the movies now, possibly people who watched you as they were growing up, that you're getting more offers like this to appear in genre pictures?
Well, I wouldn't say the offers are rolling in, to be honest with you. I think that a lot of people, you know, I am doing something this coming weekend, just a short film for a friend of mine. But, you know, it takes a long time to get the money to make a movie. And a lot of these filmmakers now, I know, are trying to make movies for, you know, less than $100,000. And
yeah,
it's also very difficult for them then to hire talent that's SAG. So I know that a lot of filmmakers are hiring friends and, you know, people that aren't SAG and non-union people, but and there's so many actors out there, so many wonderful actors. So I feel fortunate that somebody asked me after so long to be in a movie, and I'm sure I am back now, and I feel like I want to reinvest myself in my career. So I think I will get some more opportunities.
That's great.
But I do think that, you know, some filmmakers that have grown up watching you in movies, you know, they then think, oh, wow, I'd really like to work with that person or have that person on the set with me. And, you know, we all have our favorites. I mean, I have favorites that I gush over when I see people at conventions that I go to and, you know, and I meet them. I'm just, you know, so excited.
Yeah,
to see
definitely.
Them. So it happens to all of us.
Oh, that's cool. That it's nice to know that you're able to get starstruck as well. I think I get it all the time.
Yeah, I was at a convention recently, and Teresa Russell was there, and I just really like her energy, and I just think she's cool, and
yeah.
I love her voice, and I was so excited to meet her. She wasn't as excited to meet me. She was lovely and very nice, but I really was like, oh, I think you were great in Black Widow, and I loved your work, and you're so beautiful, and blah, 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 and, you know, I came off like a typical fan, but that's kind of what I am too, so that's okay.
Well, that's excellent. I'm glad it works both ways. One of the things I was going to say actually was the cast list of Lords of Salem does read a bit like a sort of who's who of a certain type of genre star, and it reunites you with Ken Foree and Richard Lynch. Also got fellow Scream Queen Dee Wallace in there, I see. Sort of what was it like working with such an established ensemble, and are they all sort of finding what you're finding, that there are these directors that are making these films now based on their memories of the movies they watched growing up?
Yeah, well, I think it's no mystery that Rob Zombie is a fan of horror movies and likes to work with genre people from movies that he has seen and liked. And there's been a couple of times where he's tried to hire me before and it didn't work out. And so I'm really glad that it worked out on this one. And I think it's really fun for us too to kind of come together and work together. And I saw some old friends on the set, and I was just so excited to see them after not seeing them for like 20 years, some of these people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very exciting to work for Rob. I love his movies. I think he's a really dynamic filmmaker and really likes to tell a dark story, but a very interesting dark story with really well-rounded characters and fun characters. And this movie is no different from that. And the interesting thing about it, too, is that he is a celebrity and a star, and he has this energy about him that's just bigger than life. And he's also used to working in such a big arena that he's so relaxed on the set. It was so much a pleasure to be there and work with him. He was just really very generous as a director, and we all had a great time.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I was going to ask, what's he like on set? I mean, as obviously a fan of horror movies, sort of, did he have a lot of fanboy questions for you, or is he sort of past that and more professional than that? Or,
you know, we talked about gardening a lot, and
okay.
His wife likes to garden too, and I really am into that, and I garden every day and work at my kid's school and do gardening and garden at home. We talked a lot about that. We talked a lot about traveling. He didn't ask me one question about any of my films, but I know he's seen everything I've been in.
Right.
But I didn't ask him anything about his music so much. We did talk about other movies that we like, and I know he's a fan, which I was kind of surprised to hear he's a fan of Don Siegel and the old Don Siegel movies from like the 70s.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting to hear, but those are some of his favorites. He was very collaborative with everyone, really wanted to see the scene on its feet and have the people, you know, talk through the scene with him and with the other actors. And he was just, you know, very easygoing and very great with the crew, and they're all extremely loyal and very respectful to him, and it was a very nice experience, and probably different than what you'd think, being, you know, that his movies are so dark. You'd think he would be so dark on set, but he really wasn't. He has a very light energy about him. It's quite a dichotomy, I guess, to his movies.
Well, you hear that a lot about sort of film directors and things, horror film directors specifically having like a great sense of humor, and actually their sets are more, their sets are sort of happier and more lively than you would imagine with, you know, fake blood and stuff flying around.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are like kids, you know, even Stuart Gordon is like that. He's like the jolliest fellow ever and is always making a joke and wanting to one-up you on a laugh and have fun. But, you know, working in this type of genre, it's, you have to have a sense of humor. You have to have a sense of fun and bigness and grandness and melodrama about you. And you have to, you know, feel bigger energy, because a lot of these movies really have a, you know, bigger than life energy, even though frequently they're about death.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, and do you think that, that that's why these movies more than anything have that kind of frantic, engaged, positive fan base? Because there is something about, and I was going to ask this question a bit later, but there's something about people working together in a group repeatedly over and over again. You see it time and time again in across all genres in the business, but, you know, predominantly in horror, you've got, you know, yourself and the Full Moon Eclipse, Charles Band, Stuart Gordon group, and there's, you know, Raimi and Bruce Campbell and people like this that work together all the time. And I think fans can relate to it on a, oh, that's like me and my friends. We would hang out and do funny horror movies or tell scary stories or whatever it is. And it's kind of got that that energy to it, don't you think? And it's a group of...
Yeah, it's like a little club. It's like, it's kind of like a little club. Everybody's in their own little club. And we'll invite anybody else into the club who likes horror movies.
Right.
And is a fan of them and has seen them or acted in them. And, you know, thank God with Facebook and Twitter and, you know, the conventions that we have, we can all get together with other people that are fans of the genre and feel like we're not alone. You know, we're not just watching it in our living room by ourselves, you know, or
definitely.
At the theater by ourselves, because everybody's tweeting about it or talking about it afterwards. And you do get a sense of the camaraderie that is even bigger than just the movie. You know, it's
definitely,
it's the fans that are involved, and you get instant feedback now that you didn't get 25 years ago when I was first starting out and doing horror movies. You know, we really hear from everybody what they think right away, and it's really fun. It's really fun for us. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's great, and it's shown, I think, that, you know, certainly as technology has gone forward, but all the people who, like I said, grew up watching these films have gone on. You look at someone like Edgar Wright or someone who's gone on to make these movies, you know, almost entirely inspired by those. Well, I mean, as you were saying, talking back to when you first started, I just wanted to, I know you started acting when you were very young, you studied it through high school and then college. What was it about acting that you loved so much, and who were your big influences?
What was it about acting? Even my daughter now, she's 9, she says, I want to be a performer, I want to be a singer. I think a lot of young children maybe have that feeling that they want to pretend, that they want to be somebody else, that they want to play something bigger than life, or, you know, explore in their imagination. And somewhere along the line, most people drop that and become something else. But, you know, we're all pretending, we're all acting, we're all, you know, interacting with one another all the time. And I think acting is an extension for me of communication. And I love people. I've always loved people. I love interacting with people. I really just enjoy understanding why people do the things they do. I think to be an actor, you kind of have to be a mini psychologist at times to be able to justify why people are doing certain actions. And I just never lost it from being a young child. I loved the whole imagination, the pretend aspect of it, and that just continued on for me, just to lose myself in another character. It's very creative for me.
Yeah.
And I notice it, you know, when I'm not acting, which is most of the time for most actors, we're not acting.
Right.
We get a job here or there. And actually for me, since I just came back this past year doing a couple of movies, you know, I hadn't really acted that much in the past 10 years. And so So I have to throw myself into other creative aspects of life to feel fulfilled. So I just think it's the understanding of people, the psychology, and being able to have this massive pretend play date with others. It's just really invigorating and fun. And also, when you're working on a movie, and I know this is true when you're working on a play, because I started in theater, there's something very liberating about the creative process and working on one thing and collectively with others, working on one massive project, and we're all dedicated to that one thing. There's so many things in life that sway your attention, and so many details in life and things you have to attend to. When you're working on a play or you're working in a movie, you're doing that one thing, and everybody's doing that one thing. And it's just quite a liberating feeling, and I love that.
And do you remember an actress or an actor who you saw mm-hmm. on the screen or on the stage yeah. as a kid growing up who really inspired you?
Well, I have to say Miriam Hopkins was one of them. You know, I used to watch the old 40s movies when I would come home from school. There was this program on called The Million Dollar Movie, and it came on at 4 o'clock Monday through Friday. And I would always watch that. Miriam Hopkins, Betty Davis, and I just thought, you know, those were actresses that were extremely big and full, and I really loved watching them.
Oh, okay, cool. Excellent. I wanted to talk just briefly. I mean, I know this must come up all the time when talking about your early films, but I wanted to talk briefly about the pressures for a young actress breaking into the film business in the 80s. It seemed like a pretty male-orientated at the time, and, for example, a lot of your early film roles feature nudity. Was that a pressure on actresses across the board in general, or was it more just a staple of the genre films you were in, and how do you think it's changed, if anything, today? That's quite a big, serious question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't feel, I don't know if pressure is the right word. I mean, okay. I think that there, I didn't feel a pressure, because, and I never really had a problem with nudity.
Right.
But I think that in horror movies especially, a woman who is in peril, who is, you know, naked psychologically and physically is quite an image.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's something that is a device to be used, and understandably so. I think it works for the genre.
So it wasn't something you felt in the business. It was just the particular films that you picked happened to have that aspect, and you were happy and comfortable with it. It was great.
Yeah, it didn't really bother me. And also it, you know, had something to do with the story.
Right. Indeed.
I mean, I feel like the movies I've done, especially for Stewart, always had great characters and had a great story. So, you know, anybody who knows me well knows that I'm no shrinking violet and I'm not shy. And I just didn't really have an issue with it. I to be honest with you, I don't really know if that's changed today, because too many people are asking me about that today.
Oh, no, but I wondered if you'd come across younger actresses or whether they'd ever asked you advice or anything like that. Not specifically about nudity, but just about anything about breaking into the business.
Mm-hmm. I think filmmakers are always going to ask women to take their clothes off, because women are beautiful with their clothes off. And it's always going to happen. And there are some actresses who are comfortable with that, and some are not going to feel comfortable with it. And it's really a personal choice whether you're up to that or not. But I know some people have turned things down because they had to appear nude.
Right.
And in fact, the girl that was originally cast in Reanimator didn't realize the whole scope of that particular scene that, you know, the movie's famous for. And I think about a week later, she turned it down after she had the part. And so when I came in and auditioned, I, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know somebody else had the part before me. I came in and, you know, I was reading the script with Bruce and Jeffrey, and I thought, oh, you know, they really like us because they keep bringing the three of us in together.
Yeah.
And we're we keep doing the scenes over and over again. And there was a few other girls out there, and I guess I don't remember any other guys, but I kept thinking, oh, this is going to work out, the three of us. But they were already cast, and they were just looking for a new Meg, and that happened to be me.
It's excellent. One of the points you made was about in the genre world, though, it seems to be both a man's world in terms of the subject matter, but also one of the few places where women can often get more complex and interesting and stronger roles. Like you were saying, there's always, especially in Stuart Gordon's films, there's always like a purpose for the woman to be doing what she's doing, and there's right. a certain strength to her character and so on. Do you like being a scream queen, and what does that term mean to you?
I think it's a moniker that I have come to grow into in the past few years. When I first did these movies, I don't think they were quite as cultish or as famous as they are today. People liked them, but we didn't know how much people liked them, because we didn't have like the social media things. You know, we had Roger Ebert, and we had Pauline Kael, and people like that really loved the movie, but we didn't know that it was going to be, you know, so popular.
Right.
When people first started calling me Scream Queen, I didn't think, oh, that's terrible or weird right. or strange name, but I just thought, oh, Scream Queen, okay. I never quite thought of myself in that way, but, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then I kept doing horror movies, and so, you know, the moniker became a little stronger for me, and now definitely people refer to me as that, and I'm written up that way. And I think now, having done a body of work, you know, in genre movies, I'm quite proud of that, and I think that's a great title for me. I love it.
Yeah, excellent. And you're in great company. I mean, there's some absolutely fantastic actresses who have come out of the genre. So, yeah, you were saying basically, like, when you got involved with Stuart Gordon and by extension, obviously, all the cast of Reanimator, that was purely just through an audition process? You hadn't known of those guys or anything beforehand?
No, never met them before at all. Anthony Barneo was our casting director and just happened to call me in, and I don't really know why. I think I was just submitted, like, maybe, you know, 100 or so other girls for that particular role, and
right.
he just happened to call me in. And it was nice because I had a theater background. I had worked in New York, and I went to school for theater and had a degree in that. That to find that pretty much all the cast had a theatrical background, and Stuart, being this was his first movie that he had ever done, he had a very extensive theatrical background. So we had a lot of rehearsal time beforehand, which he really wanted before we started shooting. So, you know, we had, I think, 3 weeks of rehearsal time, and we really worked our characters out and worked our scenes out quite extensively before we started shooting. And I don't know anybody that does that.
No, I know. And it's funny how you occasionally, when you're watching a making of or reading up on a movie that you really like, it's funny how that is something that occasionally crops up in these stories, is, oh, we got rehearsal time, and that hardly ever happens. And I think it does inform the film and make it a lot more, you know, a lot better. You can see that people are, there's chemistry there, and, you know, there's an interaction that you don't necessarily get if you just all turn up cold on a Monday morning to do the thing just off the script, you know.
I think it makes, and especially for these, you know, lower budget movies today, I think it behooves a lot of these filmmakers to do as much rehearsal as they can.
Well, yeah, because then, I mean, when they roll the cameras, they only have to capture, you know, what they've rehearsed. They don't have to do 50 takes or anything, you know.
Right.
So the films that we're going to be talking about on the show is Reanimator, From Beyond, and Castle Freak in particular. Mm-hmm. Were there any stories from the making of those movies that particularly stick out?
When I think about working with Stuart, and all the blood and all the slime that I've had on my body, Jeffrey and I came up with a little saying about Stuart, because he would always say, I just need a little more blood here. I just need more slime. Her hair is not slimy enough. I need, you know, the cuts need to be deeper, more, more, more. So we would say more is not enough.
Right.
You know, he would always want more. So, you know, quite fondly, and we are quite fond of him, we would just tease him and say, more is not enough for you. When is it going to end?
Yeah. Yeah. And you were happy to go on whatever journey he wanted you guys to take.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, yeah. I've said this to Stuart recently, and he sort of looked at me like, what? You're kidding. But I said to him, Stuart, if you could play every character in your movies, you would. Because he lives and breathes every single character. And he has so many thoughts in his head about, you know, he's like an actor. He thinks about what the character's history is, what their today is, what their tomorrow is going to be. And he shares that with you. And he's very particular and very detail-oriented about the character and what they're doing. And he really wants you to be, too, which is great fun for me because that's the way I like to work.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he quite thought that about himself, sort of caught him off guard that I said that to him. But
it's a great observation, though.
It sort of befuddled him a little bit. And I said to Jeffrey, too. I said, Jeff, because I talked to him in the past couple of weeks, I said, you know, I said this to Stuart, and I've only said this one. This is the second time I'm saying this, because I said this to an interview at a convention I went on. And he was like, what? What? And I came back, and I called Jeffrey, and I said, you know what I said to Stuart? He wants to play every character. And he goes, that's right. Of course, he does.
Yeah.
And I said, but it really caught him off guard. He thought that was really kind of odd that I would say that. He goes, oh, no, it's absolutely true. So he's, you know, he exhausts himself with, you know, how he wants the scene to go and the direction of it. And he's just really particular. And so I think that's why he likes to work with friends that, you know, he's had from the past. And, you know, he's hired a lot of the same people in different movies. And that really works for him and works for us, too, because we love him. And, you know, I'd follow him into a pit of burning embers. So it's been, you know, it's been a delightful time to work with him. And when we went to Italy to do Castle Freak,
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, filming outside the U.S. What was that like?
Well, it was. Well, we also did From Beyond.
Yeah.
In Italy at the Dino De Laurentiis Studios, where it was very cold. But I can get back to that. We were in Jove, Italy, doing Castle Freak in Charlie Band's castle that he had bought maybe 20 years ago. For a small amount of money, and he uses it for a lot of locations and a vacation home for himself. And, you know, a lot of the crew didn't speak English, so there was Jeffrey and I and a couple of other cast members and Stuart, and we would stay up late at night and tell ghost stories to one another, and we'd try to scare one another and see if we could tell the scariest ghost story ever, and we would sort of vote among ourselves. Oh, mine was better than yours. No, yours is better. No, yours is better. You know, we'd sort of entertain ourselves that night, at night doing that, because we didn't have any television, and if we did, it was Italian television. So basically, we sort of lived there and worked there, and, you know, it was pretty intense, like a family, and the storyline was pretty dark, and, you know, it was full of a lot of anger and remorse and loss, and so we were living in a sort of little own, you know, our own private hell working on that movie, but you know, not in a bad way. It was great, and it was a beautiful location.
Yeah, because of the relationship drama between you and Jeffrey's character in the film, mm-hmm. it's more of a melodrama than, say, the other two, which I think are more. Well, the From Beyond sort of more examines, obviously, the psychology of certain situations, and Reanimator, which is almost entirely about the physical, things in certain situations. But
mm-hmm. that's a good way of looking at it, too. Yeah, and I think definitely Reanimator had a lot more humor, and then From Beyond didn't have as much humor, and then Castle Freak had very little humor. You know,
yeah.
It's very stark and very serious and very, very sad. It's a very sad movie. I recently watched it with Stuart after not seeing it for however many years, 20 years.
Yeah.
They were showing, they were doing a retrospective on Charlie Band in, I think we were in Chicago. And we watched the movie together in a movie theater. And I turned to him and I said, well, what'd you think of that? And he said, I think that's my new favorite of my films.
Yeah, it's certainly a grower. Tree. Yeah, definitely.
I think it grows on you after a while. Yeah.
And I think as you grow up as well, because I mean, I think Reanimator and From Beyond, there's so much visceral stuff in that that is appealing and surreal and weird and funny and, you know, whereas Castle Freak, which has like some really graphically visceral scenes, also has, like we said, this underlying melodrama to it that is more adult. And I think you need to have maybe experienced a few relationships to get that movie. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's an interesting point, too. And that's one I hadn't thought about, because a lot of people I know watch a lot of these movies at very young ages. People come up to me at conventions and tell me they were, you know, 8 and 9 and 10 years old when they first saw Reanimator. And I'm horrified. I think to myself, my kids are that age. I would never let them watch these movies. But then they might not watch a film like Castle Freak until they get a little bit older and they want to explore a filmmaker's whole body of work.
Yeah. Or they'd watch it, but they'd not necessarily get what you can get out of it. Because I watched it, obviously, again, I think for about the third or fourth time. I'd seen it back when it I had it on video when I was at university, but I watched it again recently for the show, and it struck me way more this time watching it, you know, in my 30s than it did when I was a teenager. And I think that's probably to its strength. It'll probably just get better and better as time goes on. One of the cool things I had about like working with Stuart Gordon was there anything special on a Gordon set that you either haven't found elsewhere or that you learnt from and that proved invaluable on other people's sets?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think, you know, there's definitely a great amount of talking and collaboration that you get with Stuart Gordon previous to filmmaking, because we have rehearsed pretty much every movie that I've been in with him. We have rehearsed a lot. So again, I would go back to that and say that's been invaluable to me. And there's not a lot of rehearsal I find on other movies. So as much rehearsal as I can get, I really like that. And I like the collaboration with the director. I really like to talk to them. I want to be in their movie and I want to be in their vision. And very often you see a movie where maybe there's certain characters that don't quite fit, or they look like they're acting in a different movie. And, you know, then there's maybe most of the characters feel like they have the same energy or the same tone, you know, in the movie. And I think you want everybody to be on the same plane, or, you know, on the same, if you want to equate it with, you know, painting, you want to be working in the same medium as the other actors. You know, you don't want to be in a watercolor painting when a few of the other actors are in an acrylic or oil painting. You want to all have the same flavor and the same tone. And that really bothers me when I watch a movie and I see, and of course I notice the acting more than anything first.
Yeah.
So if I see that, you know, the actors aren't in the same movie as the other actors, it's really bothersome to me.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean by that.
Right?
Yeah, completely.
So in a Stuart Gordon movie, you don't get that. Everybody's in the same movie. You know exactly what the tone is. And I found that to be true with Adam Wingard as well, working on Your Next. And he was the filmmaker that did A Horrible Way to Die with All of My Children. And he was really great at collaborating with the other actors. And you never know what you're going to get when you show up on a set. We didn't have a lot of rehearsal time for Your Next. We did a lot of it on the set, but we had a lot of time, and we talked a lot about it every day, every scene, and he really wouldn't move on to the next scene until we had talked it through. We were all working together. We all were of the same mind. He was very instrumental in really making us see, you know, his vision for each scene and the flavor and where he wanted it to go. And I like that. I have shown up on sets where the director is there, and you know, you kind of go through the scene, and they might give you a couple notes, and then you shoot the scene, and you know, maybe they'll do a little tweaking here and there, and then you move on. And to me, that's a little unsatisfying. I just really like a lot of communication.
Yeah.
So, and I think it makes for a better movie in the end when you have the community, to me. But, you know, I mean, there's some great filmmakers that say that they don't talk to the actors. You know, Woody Allen apparently doesn't really talk to people.
Right.
And he has done some great movies, but...
Yeah. It also feels like, the with Woody Allen, that like, all the preparation is almost done beforehand. It's almost in who he hires, I think. But no, I agree, and it was part of the point that I was saying about you get these filmmaking groups, while obviously there are always other examples, people who work with the same people over and over again, either in the production side or in the performance side, seem to continually have more success with that. There seems to be a much better trust, and there seems to be a much better avenue to experiment and all those kind of things that help just generally making interesting films, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it definitely, you know, helps for the collaboration aspect and for the vision aspect of the filmmaker, you know, to have the same people around him that know him, and, you know, there's a certain shorthand that you can also use after you've worked with somebody for a number of years. And, you know, although there are some filmmakers that, I mean, even Stuart, you know, his movies do have different flavors. It depends on, you know, what it is. But he's also used to working in theater where, you know, you can have different flavors. So all of his movies, you know, working in, you know, different plays are different. They have different emotions and different through lines, and they feel different. And he's worked in comedy and he's worked in drama, and so I think he's a filmmaker that's used to working, you know, with different emotions and different levels of intensity and genres and, you know, types of feelings, so I think he's a filmmaker that's very adept at doing different styles of material.
And with you leaping back into movies over the last year, are there any plans for you guys to work together again, either with him or with Jeffrey or any of those people?
Yeah, we talk about it. You know, I mean, there's people that tell me, yeah, I really want to work with you. I'm going to, you know, we're going to get some money together. We're going to do this. And Stuart has said to me on numerous occasions, we've got to do something together. We just have to again. And I'm like, okay, great. Just let me know. But, you know, I'm not a writer, and I'm not in the financial world. So it's not something that interests me. So I'm just waiting for the call.
Yeah, of course. No, I mean, it would seem to be, I think fans in general get, they think it's a no-brainer. Like, why wouldn't getting the cast of Reanimator back together, or getting, you know, the cast of Castle Freak back together, whatever it is, why wouldn't that work? I think...
It's harder than you think. It's harder than
think
to get a good script, and it's harder than you think to raise the amount of money that you need to make a film, especially over the past few years, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And especially since all these young filmmakers are coming up and they're making, you know, kind of cool movies for $20,000. It doesn't happen all the time, but, you know, it has happened. And so, you know, people like Stewart and John Carpenter and Wes Craven, they have to compete with, you know, what these younger guys are doing. I think it's a little tough on them now.
Yeah, it seems a bit ridiculous, and it also seems a bit, it's like everyone always says about they don't give comedies Oscars. It seems a bit odd that this genre filmmaking, or horror filmmaking, or whatever you want to call it, has such a following today and has such a fan base today. And they are, I always look at them as legit, possibly too seriously, but I always look at them as legitimately good films, legitimately artistic. You know, I don't understand necessarily the culture of ironically watching certain types of films. I've not understood that. And I think they're fantastic. And it's almost a shame that people like Stuart Gordon, John Carpenter is another great example. John Carpenter is a fantastic director. Stuart Gordon's an incredible director. The fact that their names are not mentioned in the same breath as even as someone like a Scorsese is a bit odd, considering you look at Scorsese, he's done gangster pictures, you know. They all seem much, but it's great. No, I mean, I think we would all love to see you all working together again, even if it was just in a you know, one film with Jeffrey or another film with Stuart, or whatever it is.
And, you know, well, a number of years ago, he was trying to do House of Reanimator, which would have been about the Bush administration. And I was to play Laura Bush.
Right.
And it didn't, I guess you've heard about that, but it didn't happen.
I hadn't heard that you were going to play Laura Bush. I'd heard about the mooted sequel, but.
Yeah, and it didn't come together, and now we've sort of lost that opportunity. But, and I know Stuart doesn't really like to repeat himself, so in a way I've also heard him say that it's fine that that didn't come together. He always likes to do new things. He likes to move on from his stuff. So I can't believe that it won't happen. I think we're all still young enough that it can happen. So I'm hopeful.
Excellent. Well, we'd all love to see it anyway. So I just got a couple more short questions. One of them was, so you're big into Twitter. What is it you like about the format, and where can people find you online? Plug a website or upcoming appearances, things like that.
Yeah, I'm much better on Twitter than I am on Facebook. I'm not sure why. But I joined Twitter first because everybody on Your Next was on Twitter, and they said, you've got to join Twitter. We have to keep in contact with you, especially Simon Barrett, the writer. And I was like, Twitter? On Twitter? That's like weird. Why would I be on Twitter? I don't even understand what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
And I went home, and I do have a few friends who are on it. So I said, okay, show me what Twitter is. I just don't really get it. So they showed me, and I was like, okay, I'll join up, and I'll tweet a few things. And then I did, and I discovered that I really liked it. It's just fun.
Yeah.
And it's a way to keep in contact with people, and something funny or silly or your happens in your day, you can talk about it with, you know, other friends that you've met, and or other, you know, fans that follow you. I pretty much try to tweet back as much as I can to people who will tweet to me. You know, I'm not one of these people that doesn't tweet back. But so what I'm doing now is I'm having my Twitter connected to my Facebook. So basically I'm sort of cheating. Like my Twitter goes to my Facebook.
Yeah.
And I don't really do the Facebook. But now people are saying, oh, I want to be your friend on Facebook. So I'm doing that. But it can be very time consuming. And I have two children and I'm very active in their school. And I do a lot of volunteer work. And so I don't have a lot of time to devote to it. But I find that, like everybody else, I guess, when I'm waiting in line or I'm in my car and I have a few minutes here or there, I just check in and I want to see, okay, what are my followers are saying or the people I follow, what are they talking about? And then I can chime in and then I can find out what movie should I see this weekend, because they'll tell me. All the horror nerds will tell me what I'm supposed to see. And I definitely keep up with what's going on in the industry and just with friends that I've met. And it's just very entertaining and silly and fun. And I really enjoy it. I never thought I would.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I found the same thing, like starting up the show just under a year ago. And everyone was saying, oh, you've got to be on Twitter if you're going to do a show. And I was like, well, I don't know what it is. And had exactly the same experience, went on, and now I've met hundreds of people, really great, made really great friends. And, you know, and it was a good friend of mine that included you in a tweet that allowed, you know, and you were very gracious to then say, oh, yeah, of course I'll go on your show. What are you talking about? And then that was really great that was fantastic. And it has that kind of ability as well for people like myself.
Yeah, you can reach people that you never thought you could reach before.
Right.
You know, and I tweet to Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the rest of you guys, you know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of fun. You can talk to Richard Dreyfuss.
Right. No, I mean, for yeah, of course. No, for our genre
and
fans
Ellen Barkin,
and film fans.
And, you know, all these very interesting, cool people that you've watched. And it's definitely great with all these people that I met on Your Next. You know, I'm able to keep up with them on Twitter because everybody's so busy. We're all doing so many things, and really it just takes a second. You can just ask them a question or tweet something, you're thinking of them or whatever, and you just still feel connected. It's just a way of being connected, and you know, I'm all for that.
I've also found it's a much more positive forum. There was a lot of like chat rooms and other sort of places you could go to on the net that were sort of full of negative people. And I find that Twitter is actually full of positive people and people who do want to talk films or do want to talk music or whatever, whatever the subject is.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think all these people on Twitter, if they have a negative attitude, they usually lose followers or people are like, ooh.
Down,
you know, they don't. it seems to me to be a pretty positive place.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. That's what I definitely get out of it. And it's why I'm on there more than anywhere else, because I like that in my life more than negativity. But did you have any upcoming appearances that you wanted to give a shout out to or mention where you're going to be?
There's a couple of possibilities, but I've actually thought, you know, I did a few conventions this year, basically to let people know I'm kind of back again. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, meet the fans and say hello, and, you know, you do the interviews when you're at the conventions, and I can talk about the movies that I just did. And I think I may not do any appearances for a while until the movies come out.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I think I'm just going to kind of lay low at home and hang out with my family, and that'll be it. I am going to L.A., though, this coming weekend. I don't know when your show airs.
My show airs on Mondays. And yes, it'll be after this weekend. This particular episode will go up.
So I will have seen the Reanimator musical for about the fourth time.
Okay.
Because I'm going to LA. They have reopened it again. And I think they've done a fantastic job with it. And I love it. And I really want to support them. So I'm going to be down there again this weekend. And I'm going to see the new show.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. I don't know. I'll have to check if that's come to New York. I'm on the East Coast, so I don't know.
I think they are.
Okay.
I think they are coming to New York. I think they're coming to New York for a short run. I can probably send you some information on that. And then it's going to Edinburgh Play Festival
for a
month or two, I think. But I believe it's going to New York for at least a week.
Yeah,
much,
I mean,
maybe longer.
These sort of movie-based, it's funny how there are these big ones on Broadway that are doing, I don't know, Billy Elliot or Mamma Mia or any of these movies that they've turned into musicals or musicals that they've turned into movies. Sorry, Mamma Mia is a bad example. What's the other one? Ghost that they're doing, and Spider-Man and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, off-Broadway, there are these B-movies that are being turned into musicals. Evil Dead the musical was obviously hugely popular and went all around the world.
I did see that, but yeah, I heard it was great.
And Reanimator now, and I think there's a, I don't know, I don't think it's official, but there's a Silence of the Lambs one that I know is running in the Lower East Side in New York at the moment. I don't know that that's official, but that there's all these ones breaking out, and they're all, I think, like the films that they come from, they're more exciting, they're more inventive, they're more creative, they've got more spark to them necessarily than just big budget retellings of.
Right. Yeah, but Spider-Man was such a big franchise and is that, you know, people just immediately know that brand. They know that name. You know, there's certain people that when I tell them, and you'll be shocked, but I'll say I was in a movie called Reanimator, and they'll go, oh, never heard of it. So there's a lot of people out there that have never heard of every single movie I've ever been in.
No, I know. Hopefully none that listen to my show. But
probably not if they're listening now, hopefully.
But if they are listening and they haven't heard of it, by the end of the show, hopefully they'll go away and want to watch those films. I had one thing I wanted to bring up, and this just came from researching you before I came to do the interview. I do a sideline and a jokey kind of action films commentary podcast where you sort of do commentaries and things, and I chat to a friend back home. And one of the films coming up that we're going to be covering is Cold Harvest, and he would kill me if I didn't mention it. Did you have any stories about that? Just very quickly. I mean, I know it's the end of the night, but any quick stories about Cold? I was surprised to find you in a movie that we were about to cover because I wasn't aware that you had done the Gary Daniels film. So.
Well, I've never done a movie like that before or since. It's, you know, a martial arts action movie.
Yeah.
I knew Brian Genesee, who's in it, from working in soap operas, because I've worked pretty extensively in soap operas, and he was on The Bold and Beautiful for a while. So we were friendly. So I knew him, and I didn't know Gary at all. And I didn't know this whole world.
Yeah.
And they flew me off to South Africa, and we did this movie, and it was great fun. This, you know, post-apocalyptic film. It was sort of crazy and fun, and, you know, it was just, there was a story interspersed in the middle of all these, you know, high kicks and pool fighting, and, you know, I didn't get to do any of that.
Right.
But afterwards, I can remember thinking, wow, I want to learn how to do this stuff. This is cool.
Yeah.
But of course, it lost its luster after I came home, and I never invested myself in it. But I had a great time working on it. It was really cool and really fun. And, you know, I can't say that I'm like a fan of those kinds of movies because I haven't watched a lot of them, but I did see The Raid recently.
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it? Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, my God. And thank God for Twitter, because everybody on Twitter was like, you got to see The Raid.
That's how I found out about it. Yeah, completely.
But also, it did play at the Toronto Film Festival when I was there, but I didn't have time to see it. So I had heard of it, but then I was reminded of it again when it came out. And so I went to see it, and it was as good as everybody says.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just, you know, I mean, that was like the coolest action film I've ever seen in my life.
And brutal. Like that last scene is when it just goes on and on and on. Absolutely brutal. Fantastic.
Intense. It was great storytelling and great action.
Yeah.
But that was my one little foray into, you know, action, and I had a great time on it. It was really cool. And Gary Daniels is quite, you know, the star himself of the genre. He has his little niche of movies. When you talk about people that, you know, work in their little genre, I mean, he's made like an amazing career for himself doing these movies. And every once in a while, I look him up on IMDb and I see he's done like 20 new movies. And, you know, so there's a lot of people out there that are just so hungry for that type of movie as well. So, you know, love him. He's
yeah, completely.
Great.
Well, I had never really dipped into it. I'd seen the big ones, Lethal Weapons, Die Hards, things like that. Mm-hmm. But then a friend of mine on Twitter was sort of, I was slowly getting into it, and these kind of movies more like Seagal and Van Damme and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend on Twitter said he came on to do a Steven Seagal commentary thing that we did, and then he sent me a bunch of DVDs, and one of them was a Gary Daniels double bill, and Cold Harvest is on there. So I thought, well, I'll be cheeky and ask you a question on that. I know it's off topic, but I thought that...
Yes, that's great. Yeah. No,
excellent.
Thank you for asking about it. Not many people do.
Exactly. Well, that's the other thing, is it's difficult sometimes. Someone like yourself, or, you know, and I've mentioned him before, but I'm a big fan of Bruce Campbell or Jeffrey Combs or these genre stars. It's difficult. There's so much written about them. There's so many commentaries, making ofs and things like that. I always try and ask questions, if I can, that are either a bit different or sometimes a bit serious, because I'm just not just sort of goofing off or whatever it is, just something different that you might not have been asked about before. And I knew that you probably hadn't been asked about Cold Harvest.
Yeah, thank you. It brings me back to those fun days in South Africa.
Wow, yeah, and you've worked all over the place. That's fantastic. Do you like travel?
I'd love to travel. I'd love to travel a lot more. Yeah, when my kids get older, I plan to do that.
Excellent. Well, look, thank you so much, Barbara, for being on the show. It's been...
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I've loved talking to you. I think
your films are fantastic.
And you're a great actress. So, look, have a great evening, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for your lovely questions. Good night.
I'm Steven Seagal. That's right, Steven Seagal. And for the past 40 years, in between barbecuing oxen and roasting boar for my insatiable appetite, I never miss an episode of Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid commentaries. Ain't that right, Johnny?
Hi, I'm Dr. Action.
Hi, and I'm the Kick-Ass Kid.
When I'm not watching action films, I'm usually polishing my gun while looking at a bat.
And when I'm not watching action films, I'm normally outside with a harpoon killing puppies.
But usually you can find us both watching 80s, 90s action films. You could follow us on Twitter, Dr. Action Kick-Ass.
You can find us on our main page, which is dractionkickass.blogspot.com.
You can also find us on iTunes and TalkShoe.
Yes, every week we do a commentary on an 80s and 90s action classic, and where we can, we also provide the film so that you can watch along with it.
This podcast explodes.
Hey, where's that baby mama at? I gotta tase somebody.
There are men, and then there are second unit podcast men. Podcast you've just been listening to is part of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. Our fantastic list of shows include Drunk on VHS, We Came from the Basement, No Budget Nightmares, The After Movie Diner, Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid, and Bloodbaths and Boomsticks. Take one podcast into the shower. Don't be a blithering idiot, Alan. We can give you the multiple podcast cleansing system all in one place that your hair deserves. Our programming is available across all platforms, from iTunes to Podomatic, TalkShoe to Stitcher, so you have absolutely no excuse. Listen today, and a free naked person of your choice will be shipped from Thailand to your door in a matter of weeks. The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Bloody hell, who does a girl have to blow around here to get a decent beverage?